number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, I'm not here to rain on anybody's parade, but something tells me that these conference basketball tournaments that we are so enjoying this week just have too much influence in the process of choosing NCAA teams. You can actually have a terrible regular season, win your conference tournament, and get your automatic bid. That's something that's been argued for years and years, whether there's any real reason for that. But that's not going to go away because these conference tournaments have to have something to play for. Just outside of just winning a ring, there's got to be some other big prize at the end. And some schools and some teams have made the argument that you don't want to necessarily go all out when you're at these tournament conference tournaments, especially when you know that the NCAA tournament offers the bigger prize. Why play an extra few games? Why not get in and get out, get to the conference, get to the NCAA tournament, and move on from there? Why expend energy? Why worry about what happened to Kenyon Martin when he suffered an injury for the Cincinnati Bearcats and they lost him for the NCAA tournament? Why run the risk? These arguments have been made for years and years. This is not a new thing. But I'm wondering, as we wonder if when we're going to change or buck trends, and I've kind of been using baseball and NFL and college basketball into this conversation, is it time to take a look at these conference basketball tournaments and say, oh, well, you know, I don't know. Should we give an automatic bid at the end? Are they really important? Let me tell you something. They're fun, and I hope they never go away. They're never going to go away because they're money grabs, first of all. But I don't want them to go away. But I brought up the example of Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt suffered its first back-to-back loss since early January. They had a pretty good season with Kevin Stallings. They've got a good shooting team. They lost to Tennessee. They lost when making a furious comeback, Wade Baldwin let go of a shot that found the bottom of the net. Unfortunately, he released it about a half a second too late. So instead of going to overtime, Vanderbilt loses to a not very good Tennessee team. And now they're on the bubble. If we didn't have conference tournaments, they would be in the NCAA tournament. But now they're really on the bubble. One game. Now, you may say, well, that's just the way it goes. And that's fine. That's fine. In college football, conference tournaments can make or break your run towards a national championship in terms of being looked at by the committee. The first year, we didn't have a Big 12 team in. And people said it was the lack of the conference tournament because of it. So to some people, in some eyes, that played a significant role in why the Big 12 was not represented in the first four-team playoff. Here, we have something different. We have opportunities for teams to make right what went wrong the whole season. Ups and downs and struggles, catch heat at the right time, and play your way into the NCAA tournament. We've seen a number of teams do that. Look, Holy Cross is in the NCAA tournament, and they had a terrible year. They had the most losses of any team to be in because they caught fire at their NCAA tournament. Mississippi Valley State is two wins away of getting in, and the Delta Devils had a terrible year. But you catch fire at the right time. And the prize at the end of that rainbow is so worth it. I've asked a number of coaches who have experienced both the NIT and the NCAA tournament. Would you rather go to the NIT finals or one game in the NCAA tournament? They all said the NCAA tournament, even if it means losing in the first round. The exposure alone on that for your program is valuable, even if it doesn't mean an extended stay in the tournament. You get more mileage out of that than an NIT trip to New York. So it is worth it to turn on the jets as much as you can and play in. And you know what? To some people, the storyline of that, a team doing that like Holy Cross, you know, that makes a week like this worth it. Let me tell you, Sunday, if in Nashville at the SEC tournament, if I'm watching Tennessee play South Carolina for a right to go to the NCAA tournament, I'm going to watch a Tennessee team pour every ounce of energy they have onto the court. Every ounce. It's guaranteed. No lackluster performance, because that prize is right there for them. Just get done 40 minutes of basketball and you're going to punch your ticket into the tournament. But it still doesn't change the fact that it feels really awkward when a team does that. It really doesn't. To me, there's an issue with it. I think it's fun to say, oh, look at those spunky Holy Cross Crusaders. They're in the NCAA tournament. But then there's a part of me that says, wait a minute, are they seriously being rewarded for a good couple of days of hoops when they were swimming in the sewer of college basketball for the whole season, and they get to go to a place that a team like Vanderbilt doesn't get to go to because for a brief period of time, they made a run? I'm all for the inclusiveness of the NCAA tournament. And to be honest with you, you really can't have it another way if you're going to have that big of a field. And let's be honest. And I've said this a number of times, and let's be honest. If Vanderbilt doesn't get in, and I live in Nashville, so it's a little bit more closer to home for me. If Vanderbilt doesn't get in on Selection Sunday, it's not the committee's fault. It's not Dick Vitale's fault. It's not the media's fault. It's their fault. If you're on the bubble, you have to win games. You know the rules. This doesn't surprise anybody. If you've been paying attention to college basketball, you know if you're a bubble team or not. You don't need Joe Lunardi to tell you that. Kevin Stallings and his staff know exactly where they stand. And it's the same. It same goes for Syracuse. It same goes for anybody else that's riding that crest of we may not get in. We're in trouble. Win some basketball games. And to be honest with you, it's not like college football, where if you're Baylor or TCU and you don't get into the playoff, and you'll have a good portion of the country screaming that it's injustice because there's only four teams. So if you're the fifth team and you don't make it in, you can make a good case that you're one of the best teams in the country. You have 68 teams that are going to get picked for this thing. 68. Now, granted, some of them are automatic bids, but there's still a huge chunk that are out at large bids. If you don't get one of those, it's your fault. And I'm going to be honest with you. I've never watched an NCAA tournament where I said, you know, that 20-win Colorado team would certainly have added a flavor to this thing. Again, it's not even really a debate. If you can't get into a field of 68, that's your fault. So again, Sunday you're going to hear, you'll hear the Jay Billises of the world. You'll hear the Dick Vitales of the world. You'll hear the Seth Davises or whoever. You'll hear them lament the case for a team that got snubbed. That's her job. That's what they have to do. But raise your hand if you've ever felt sorry for any one of those teams that has 21, 22, 23 wins, a lousy conference record, terrible RPI, all of the measurements. How many of you have ever felt bad for a team because they should have been in the tournament? You know the deal. So I'm in the car picking up my son from track. We're listening to the Vanderbilt game on the radio. My son's a huge Commodores fan. His friend is a huge Commodores fan. They were watching it in the school after track practice. They were in the car. We were listening it on the way home. Baldwin's shot leaves his hand. It looks like the game is tied. The Commodores announcer thought the game was tied. Then they waved it off. The boys in the backseat of my car were really upset. One of them said, do you think they'll make the NCAA tournament? I said, I don't think so. It's heartbreaking, but they have nobody else to blame but themselves. Now, that's a microcosm I don't mean to be a Vanderbilt-centric. I'm bringing them up. It's a microcosm for every team that's like that during the conference tournament. I'm looking at Syracuse, for example. Jim Boeheim's going to wonder how the committee is going to look at their team while he was away. Nobody to blame but yourself. You know the drill. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Coming up next, hooray, Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again, from the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, a couple of years ago, I was living in Colorado Springs, and in Colorado Springs, Goose Gossage is a legend. He's from that area. Of course, he's a Hall of Famer and whatnot. And I remember, we started a campaign on the show that I was on called Goose in the Hall, because Goose Gossage was continually not getting voted into the Hall of Fame. So we did a whole bunch of cool things on the show, and we were, trying to get attention. We tried to get a hold of voters to try to sway their vote to get Goose Gossage in the Hall of Fame. We organized a trip out to Cooperstown to try to get him out there. I mean, we tried to do all these things because Goose Gossage is a legend. Well, Goose had an interview where he kind of went off on a lot of things, and he used a lot of naughty words in order to make those points. Jeff Passan wrote in his column at Yahoo Sports, this is where I got to go. Way to go, Jeff Passan. I don't know if you saw this, Adam, but this was a quote-for-quote breakdown of all the Goose Gossage things that he said, and then the reality rebuttal to some of the nonsense that Goose was espousing. And one of the things that he had said was, well, first of all, Goose said about Juan Bautista, he's an embarrassment to the Latin players, whoever played before him, throwing his bat and acting like a fool. And Passan says, look, Bautista hit a home run in the deciding game of the American League Division Series. It was one of the best moments of Major League Baseball that entire year. It was an entire city losing its mind, a loud stadium going crazy. He flipped the bat, and it was just out of pure exuberance. It wasn't like it was a home run in a 6-0 game in July. It was this great moment. But Gossage lumping Latin players into this thing was a little weird.
That's a joke.
That is really, really awful. He's embarrassing to all the Latin players, whoever played before him, throwing his bat and acting like a fool.
He's obviously never watched like the Caribbean Series or anything.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That. Those are the most fun baseball games to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all in the dugout dancing and singing and doing all kinds of stuff while there's actually a game going on. Like they swing at everything. Yeah, the fans are going nuts, and they do all that. They have bat flips down there. They do all that kind of stuff.
It is. I loved it, and I think I was totally fine with it. I'm not an old man, grouch like Goose Gossage is. Then he said this, let me just say this right now. When he said this, I was really glad Passan called him on it, because, quote, the game is becoming a freaking joke because of the nerds who are running it. I'll tell you what has happened. These guys played rotisserie baseball at Harvard or wherever, and they thought that they figured the game out. They don't know bleep. Theo Epstein doesn't know anything about baseball?
Nope.
Theo Epstein is a Harvard nerd who played rotisserie baseball who thinks he knows the game. Theo Epstein orchestrated one of the greatest World Series championships in the history of the game, ending a gigantic curse of the city of Boston. And he's about ready to end another one in Chicago. He's about ready to become the greatest general manager who ever became a general manager. I couldn't care less where he went to school. And I think he went to Yale, by the way.
Yeah, he went to Yale.
So I don't think he went to Harvard. But Goose's point is these guys are all Ivy Leaguers. Who went to Harvard? One of them went to Harvard. Andrew Feinstein, I think, went to Harvard, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
One of them went to Harvard.
The Dodgers one.
The Dodgers kid. He went to Harvard. This idea that these guys are just rotisserie playing geeks, I'm telling you right now, even though they're young, like John Daniels got the GM job at a young age, Theo got a job at a young age, these guys are really smart, and they have worked in baseball. They didn't graduate from Harvard and became general managers. They worked under general managers. And to be honest with you, here's the way it works, Goose. Even if you don't like the sabermetrics and all the analytics, and even if you don't like that, let me tell you what. These guys only last as long as that system works. If it's so idiotic and so ridiculous, it'll come out in the wash. Right? If this stuff is just irrelevant and nobody believes in it and it's all stupid, well, then you have nothing to complain about, because these Harvard-educated rotisserie geeks will find themselves out of the league in 2 seconds. I mean, if I decided I wanted to be a general manager and I walked into the, the Tampa Bay Rays front office and said, hey, I got a new way of organizing teams. What I do is I take a bunch of baseball cards and I throw them on the ground, and whichever ones pop up with the face, that's the guys I want. If it goes face down and I'm looking at the back of their cards, well, those are players I don't want. And the Tampa Bay Rays are like, that's a great system. You ought to be hired as their general manager. And they hire me as their general manager. Well, the moment I go 52-110, I'm no longer general manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, no matter what system I use. I mean, this is old man idiocy. This is like when your old Uncle Joe or your grandpa says crazy stuff and you're just kind of rolling your eyes like, okay, all right. This is what Goose Gossage is doing. Man, it was better in my day. That's Goose Gossage. I mean, no advancement. All better in my time. He says you can't slide into second base. Passan writes, you can slide into second base. You're not allowed to barrel into second base, ignoring the health and safety of the person you're trying to turn a double play.
Well, what I found interesting is this is the same day that Bryce Harper's comments come out basically bashing the unwritten rules.
It's beautiful.
Baseball.
It's a beautiful, beautiful comparison.
Yes. I mean,
between an old baseball player that just laments the fact that the game is changing, and Bryce Harper was saying the game's not changing enough in the other way. Because Harper's point is a valid one. Look, I'm looking around, and all I see is sports stars celebrating and showing personality and having fun. And then in my sport, that's struggling for a national audience, locally baseball does well. Nationally, it's hard to get the nation to watch Game of the Week or anything, or Sunday Night Baseball. People just tend to be more local with the sport. Harper is making a valid argument that the sport does need to reach and go into another direction. That if you hit a home run and you're genuinely happy about it, the rule shouldn't be I get plunked the next time I come up to the plate. That I won the battle.
Right.
I get the bragging right.
It should be that the next time you come up to the plate, the pitcher throws inside to back you off the plate because you just hit a home run. But
sure.
He doesn't have to hit you square in the back or up near the head or anything like that.
Exactly.
I mean, look at Korea and Japan. These guys do monster bat flips, and the nations love their sports.
And I think Harper would be the first to say, look, I'll celebrate when I hit a home run. You can dance on the mound if you strike me out.
Yeah, he said it about Jose Fernandez.
Yeah. If it means the game is more fun and we're showing some personality, I'll take my lumps. We'll talk to Max Edison on the Houston Texans next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to talk about NFL free agency. And yesterday, we got the Broncos' perspective on the Brock Osweiler signing with our good friend Renaud Notaro, who told us what was going on in Denver with the negotiations. Well, now let's get Houston's side of the deal. Did they overpay for this quarterback? Max Edison joins us from Houston Defender. You can follow him on Twitter at It's Max Edison. He joins us here on YSR. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, Tony D? Long time no hear from.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, only when big-time news breaks in Houston. And Brock Osweiler, did they overpay for him, my man?
Oh, yeah, there's no question we overpaid for him. You know, we were in dire straits. I don't know if you saw that debacle in the playoffs with Brian Hoyer, you know, losing 30-0 to Kansas City. And I think the bone crush of the Texans, most notably Rick Smith, decided that, you know, we've got a couple of choices. You know, we won enough games that we're in the middle of the pack of the draft. So probably what we need to do, since we're not going to get one of the top three quarterbacks, is go ahead and get the number one quarterback available in free agency. And sometimes you have to overpay a little bit when you're in the situation that we're in with no quarterback. But I think it's a good investment. Osweiler, I think, is around 25, 26. He's just coming into what should be the prime years of his career. Of course, you trust the judgment of a guy like John Elway, who drafted him in the second round a couple of years back. So seems like he's been properly vetted. He's got more NFL experience than any guy that's going to be in the draft.
Is this more of a we'll wait and see, or are people genuinely excited about having this guy as the quarterback of the Texans?
I think people are genuinely excited because, let's face it, we had Ryan Fitzpatrick a year ago, who was fair to Midland, and we had Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett this year, which was atrocious. So we had a chance, even though it was a small sample size, we had a chance to see Osweiler. He has all of the traits. He's been exposed. He knows what a winning organization looks like. So whoever comes in as the quarterback has to be a leader of men as well. And he's seen that, and that's one of the things he mentioned today in his press conference, is that being around Peyton Manning for the last 3 years, it showed him what a leader, what a winning quarterback is all about. And I hope he brings those characteristics to the Texans.
Does his lack of sample size concern you or concern fans? I mean, it's 7 games, albeit he went 7-2, but it's not like he has a full, you know, full 2 or 3 seasons under his belt.
Well, let's put it like this. He's got a larger sample size than Carson Wentz, a golf out at Cal, or Paxton Lynch out of Memphis. We've already had Fitzpatrick, and we know what a joke that was. So I think based on what was available, we got the very best prospect that was out there. We feel good about what he's been exposed to. He's been exposed to John Elway. He's been exposed to Gary Kubiak. And he's got all the qualities that you would be looking for in a quarterback. So you got to roll the dice. We can't sell another Fitzpatrick or Brian Hoyer to the Houston fans. And this works. This will work.
From the standpoint of what the Texans were last season without a solid quarterback, what kind of team is Brock Osweiler inheriting? Because it still has J.J. Watt, a dynamic wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins, an addition of Lamar Miller. I'm looking at this Texans team, and I'm seeing it seems like he's going into something pretty good.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think two of the key components that you haven't mentioned, Jeff Allen, big guard from Kansas City that we acquired, as well as Tony Bergstrom, a king-size center from the Oakland Raiders. I think what you're seeing is the rebuilding of the offensive line to strengthen it, make it bigger, better, to allow him the protection that he needs. You see an upgrade in the running back position. Of course, Arian Foster is out. Lamar Miller is in, who should be a very solid player that brings a different element out of the backfield. A speedy, tough running back. And speed is something that we were sorely lacking, not only in the running back position, but at wide receiver as well. So I think all four of the moves, all four of the free agent acquisitions work together toward the good of the whole on offense.
In terms of Bill O'Brien, he's a good quarterback's coach, but he hasn't been able to work out with the quarterbacks that he's had. Do you think it'll be different with Osweiler working well with the guy that, you know, worked in New England and was coaching at Penn State?
Well, it better damn well be, because I don't know how much of a, you know, he carries the title of a quarterback guru, but hell, when he got to New England, Tom Brady was already there and won a Super Bowl or two. You look at Christian Hackenberg, well, that's a couple of years at Penn State. So what in the hell has he really done with quarterbacks that would make us believe that he's all that he's advertised to be? Clearly, you can tell that I'm a little bit suspect to Bill O'Brien, but no more excuses should be the battle cry for the Texans this year. He's got a capable guy with a measure of pedigree. It's up to him to continue to coach him up.
You mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, and while I have you, I might as well get your thoughts on him. A couple of season in, very, you know, injury riddled, but when he's played, do you like what you see from him in 2 years?
Yeah, I've developed a good relationship with Jadeveon, and yeah, I think one of the things that has really surprised a lot of people that watch the Texans is how good Jadeveon has been against the run. Most of us thought, well, we figured he can come in and he can rush the passer and put pressure on the passer, but I think a lot of people have been pleasantly surprised at his ability to play and stop the run. And I want to tell you, there's not a more frustrated guy in the Texans organization than Jadeveon at his inability to stay healthy. And, you know, the thing that bothers him the most is all through high school, all through college, never had the level of injury that he sustained in just 2 years in the NFL.
Well, whether it works or not, is this signing of Osweiler just kind of a breather for Texan fans? At least that position is solid for right now?
Oh, no question about it. And hopefully for the next 4 to 5 years to come, this deal is eerily reminiscent of the deal that we made some years back with Atlanta to acquire Matt Schaub. And that worked out very well, except for that last year when we were 2-11. Matt Schaub did a very serviceable job, you know, for Gary Kubiak and bringing that level of play at quarterback that had been missing for a while. Of course, also in that component was the emergence of Arian Foster. So we're hoping that we can catch lightning in a bottle again with this combination of Osweiler, adding in Lamar Miller. Of course, there's already DeAndre Hopkins. And I think the other thing that acquiring Osweiler does is it frees us up in the draft that we really don't have to take any position regardless to, you know, what the board dictates. If we decide to go speedy wide receiver, there's Dotson out of TCU. There's the other young man from Baylor. There's Miller out of Notre Dame. Of course, we know that there's a lot of volume and depth in the defensive line. So if we happen to go that way, it's good. If we look for more infrastructure and youth in the offensive line, it really frees us up because we've handled three of the top three needs that the team had coming into the offseason. Finding a starting quarterback, finding a running back that's a serious big play threat, and then providing more infrastructure in the offensive line, having lost Ben Jones, the center, and Brandon Brooks, one of the other guards. So in one fell swoop, in one day, we addressed all those offseason issues, and now we can concentrate on the draft and build an additional depth through the NFL draft coming up in, late April.
Yep. Max Edison, Houston defender, great talking to you as always. I promise if the Rockets make some run, we'll have you back on.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony D, I've already made reservations for you on the Texan bandwagon. We got a seat with your name on it. And, you know, we're just ready, man. This has really fortified the fan base in Houston. Of course, as up and down as the Rockets season has been, and of course, we're anticipating anxiously the Astros, we needed this boost because, you know, first and foremost, regardless of what else happens, Houston is a football town.
Good talking to you, my friend.
Take care, partner, as always.
Oh, I love Max Edison. You know, we have guys that we've had on for a variety of events and news and whatnot. And Max Edison was our main Houston Rockets guy when the Rockets were making a push 2 years ago in the playoffs and last year in the playoffs. And I love the character. I love his character. He's a fun dude to have on.
I just love how he gave us crap because we haven't talked to him in a while because the Rockets are so
because
bad.
Because the Rockets stink, we haven't had him on the show in forever. So that's why we said, well, the Texans made some news. We'll get him on now.
The Astros are starting. They're exciting.
Yeah, the Astros are exciting, too. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio. And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Telephone number to join us, 800-777-2907. Again, our thanks to Max Edison, just giving us a Houston perspective. We had Reno Notaro from Denver on yesterday to give us the Broncos side of things. I think it's the weirdest thing that this... I mean, think about this story. I mean, this sounds like a book you would write, like a novel. Kid spends all these years on the bench, finally gets his shot, plays 7 games, loses his job. The old man wins the Super Bowl. He gets a big, huge contract, spurns the old team. John Elway comes out and says, well, we only want people here who are Broncos. Oh, all right, what is that supposed to mean? So Denver gets rid of a guy that owned the city for a couple of weeks as the excitement of Brock Osweiler was fever pitch. And now Houston gets him, and now they feel like they've got that quarterback position secured. 800-777-2907. All right, so Adam said to me, did you see this thing? And I said, no, I didn't. And he said, well, then we're going to play it for you coming up in this break. So explain what you've got in store for us.
All right, the other night when the Cleveland Cavaliers were in Sacramento, there is a young kid named Terrence who lives in Sacramento, and he just kind of pronounces names a little weird.
Okay.
And there's a Vine. His older brother put out a Vine of him just saying LeBron James's name. And it's very funny. He says it very weird. So the Sacramento Kings had him come in and basically announce LeBron James during the starting lineups.
Now, before you say this, is he from Sacramento
yes.
And this was easy? Or did they fly him in from some of the...
No, he's from Sacramento.
Cool.
He kind of has a relationship with the Kings because it started with DeMarcus Cousins. And the way he said that, and then it came out with LeBron James, so they brought him in for this game.
Okay. Now, does LeBron know about this kid, or is he now just learning about this kid?
See, that's what I've looked, and I cannot find if LeBron knew. I need to look a little harder to see if LeBron actually knew. Because I've seen some people question, like, did LeBron say this was okay? I mean, if LeBron didn't say this was okay, he's just dumb.
Oh, my God. Is this bad? All right.
No. It's not bad at all. I mean, this is a little kid. This kid's probably 6.
Oh, my gosh. So okay.
Maybe 4 or 5, somewhere in that range. So
all right,
he's
so
a
this
young
is,
kid.
All right. So you have the cut of him saying LeBron's name.
Yes. This
You've
is
built it up pretty
game.
Good now.
Yeah,
You've built it up pretty good.
Just wait for it. Here it comes.
Okay.
From St. Vincent, St. Mary's High School, number 23.
LeBron James.
And that's how he actually says it. Like, there's videos of him saying it over and over different times, and that's just how he says it.
Who's the guy that did the from St. Vincent High School?
I think that's the normal announcer.
No, that didn't sound like a very good announcer guy.
No, it didn't at all, did it?
No, that sounded like, hey, I'm his brother. He only does it if I'm around.
Right.
So I have to kind of set him up. Otherwise, he's not going to do it. That's what that sounded like. That didn't sound like, oh, I'm the paid I'm the paid PA announcer for the Kings.
Yeah, I'd rather listen to the kid just announce everything.
That's great.
LeBron James.
Jeez.
That kid should just follow LeBron. Should just hire that kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever LeBron walks in the room, the kid walks in first, says LeBron's name, and then LeBron, the doors open for LeBron.
Do it like a Michael Buffer situation, right? Where he just copyrights that.
Yep.
Anybody who tries to mimic that in some way, shape, or form, LeBron's personal, court announcer. Anywhere he goes. LeBron walking into a restaurant, LeBron walking into the get his hair cut, LeBron getting his oil changed, whatever. The kid's following him around. I wonder if LeBron gave him a jersey or anything. Like, that was pretty cool, kid. Here's a jersey.
I bet you did something. He has the kid Terrence has a bunch of pictures with like DeMarcus Cousins because he says that a little weird. And there's some videos of other Kings players because he's a Kings fan, obviously, from Sacramento.
I'm telling you, man, you know what LeBron ought to give that kid? Remember I told you the story about getting those NBA socks? He should give the kid NBA socks.
Yeah.
They're the best. They are the best. I looked online the other day because I was telling my daughter about them. And I had never told my daughter the story about how I got a pair of NBA socks and they were the best socks I've ever worn. And she's now getting into basketball. And I told her the story and she's like, hey, can you get those again? And I go, yeah, they're like $12 a pair. I mean, it's you're walking on a cloud. Don't get me wrong. $12 for a pair of socks. But they're great. That's what LeBron should give him. Boy, that kid's great. So the Kings going to does he do a number of other names? Could the Kings use him a lot?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if they'll actually do it, but
I wonder if our good friend Marcos Bertón knows about this child.
I bet you
he does. This child prodigy. I'm sure he does.
Maybe he was at the game, covering the
maybe
game.
Maybe he was at the game. I'm sure he was. With LeBron in town, I'm sure Marcos had to go to that one. Speaking of LeBron, did you see him play Kobe tonight? A few little highlights of that one?
Yeah.
The last meeting between LeBron and Kobe. Now, I didn't quite know. Is this the last meeting, or was this just the last meeting at the Staples Center?
I got to think
the Lakers are done on the East Coast stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this
close was to
it.
The end of the season.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was it.
Wow, LeBron and Kobe calling it quits. Kobe had like 20 something points tonight.
Yeah, they both had good games. Yeah,
yeah. Good for now. I read a column where the columnist was critical of Kobe because he tends to not play at home. Like on the road, because it could, you know, almost everywhere he goes now, especially at this point in the season, almost everywhere he goes is a good bet that this is the last one, you know. So he tries to play those games where he knows it's the last trip to like Phillips Arena in Atlanta or down in Miami or wherever he's going. So even if he's kind of got some bumps and bruises, he still tries to play because he knows it's the goodbye tour and guys want to. You know. But then this columnist wrote, look, not every Laker fan is going to, you know, 40 games a year. There are guys who are choosing only one game to try to salvage and get tickets for. And you're just shutting it down on a lot of home nights. And I'm thinking, wow, poor Kobe. He can't win for nothing. He's an old man. He's trying to take a day off, and they're already giving him heck for it. Yahoo Sports Radio.